What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into the Thanksgiving edition, if you will, of Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdahl. Find me at C70 at the Bat, which is part of the Cards Conclave, at C70 on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily and AMedlock1 on Twitter. You can find us all there. We've all got 280 characters now, so we're twice as exciting as we used to be. Assuming you could take twice of nothing, but you know, we got it. Alan, obviously the big news right now, and this is the news that's we've talked about, came out a little bit earlier today. Cardinals have put together an official offer. A formal offer. Formal offer. That's what it was. For Giancarlo Stanton. They have given, we don't know what, but we assume we have given names, they have given financial information, they have given some sort of deal to the Marlins for Giancarlo Stanton. You and I were talking about this before the show, but without getting into who might be going from the Cardinals and what all that means, just the idea that they've given them an offer, what does that mean for you?
I was glad, and I'm going to say this, you know, you and I had talked about it before, I wanted to stay away from Stanton tonight, just because I felt like at the meetings all this week that we don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's reports coming out of nowhere. Back to the question, I'm glad that it's happening fairly early, like you and I had also talked about. This could be a situation where Florida told them that they needed to come out with something by today, you know, and that this is where they're going to look over, and there's going to be they're going to look over every offer that anybody's interested in. They're just not going to fly in. There's so much that we may find out later after when everything's said and done. But I'd still like the urgency of them doing it now. My biggest concern is they're going to be hamstrung waiting on this. So I'm glad that word's getting out. I don't even want to guess what it is. The contract is so hairy that I don't think any of us know what's going to come back, the X amount's going to come back, or X amount they're going to keep. And I'm not completely convinced that Florida knows what they're going to do. So long story short, I'm glad that it's out now. I'm glad that we're kind of at least marching to where there can be some clarity on this down the line, whether it's good or bad in the Cardinals' favor.
Yeah, and you said you do worry about them missing out or being hamstrung as they wait on this, but it does feel to me, to some degree, that the whole market's kind of holding their breath, even people that don't have anything to do with the Stanton and have no interest in this thing seem to be kind of waiting on this, because that's all we're hearing about. I mean, we kind of hear little bits here and there. You know, the Orioles are apparently interested in Lance Lynn and here and there. And maybe it's just, you know, the fact that, you know, our viewpoint is the Cardinals, and that's what we're hearing. But it just doesn't seem, I mean, no other, the Mariners have made a couple of minor deals, because I think that's how Jerry DePoto actually keeps himself alive, is just to make some sort of deal every day. Nobody else has done anything. So I think that they can be okay. It also helps that there's not, I mean, they don't seem to be wanting to go after J.D. Martinez. So anybody else that's going to be out there is probably going to be acquired by trade, and that, you know.
What's kind of scary, and people don't – I don't know if guys want to hear this, but I wonder if this big offensive upgrade isn't Stanton or nothing. if they're going to redirect toward more run prevention, or maybe look at Longoria, which I would really like to see happen if this were to fall apart. Just because I don't know if there's any options that move the needle like Stanton does. I don't think they're going to go. I don't think they're going to pay $200 million, or he's not going to get it anyway. Mm-hmm. Let's say $150 to $170 for Martinez, like you mentioned. You know, I don't know. Week to week, I kind of change my stance on that. I just don't know. I mean, you look at comparable bats to Stanton, which they're. I mean, there's going to be hard to find one. You know, other than your Judge, your Altuves, your Trouts, your guys like that had those monster years that are going to be available, that are going to do the things that Stanton can do, and that could be available unless they pull something out of a hat. So I don't know. It's funny that you even say just the whole league is kind of hampered. This is the one, the Cards are involved this year on that one deal that makes that's going to be it's going to be the one that breaks that'll break the levees. You know what I mean? That everything will flood after this. And it's not very often that the Cardinals are involved in that. So I don't know. I'm really curious to see how it goes, and just kind of bored and kind of want to see how it goes.
You know, what I thought when I heard this, it just was very interesting to me to finally have the Cardinals kind of nailed down on an interest. Because I think a lot of times, you know, even when they were chasing David Price, you didn't ever get until the deal was done and you found out the Cardinals came in second. They never really seemed to, I don't know. I mean, we knew they were interested in it, but there was nothing that they said that really kind of made you feel like they were really interested in it. You weren't really sure if they were going after Price, or if that was just a little bit of, you know, wishful thinking. You know, now we know that there is an interest in Giancarlo Stanton, that they're very committed to this idea of bringing him to St. Louis. Now, how committed, I don't know. Is it going to be enough? I don't know. Ken Rosenthal was saying that, you know, the Giants have made an offer as well, and the Red Sox were expected to, and maybe a couple of others, that the Marlins were hoping to get some firm offers this week so they could see where they were standing. So I don't know if it means as much as we think it does, but it is good to see them walking the walk. I guess that's the best way to put it, that they're backing up what they're talking about by, you know, they've talked about an impact bat, and they've talked about an impact bat. Well, they're going out and trying to get an impact bat. And, you know, if they don't get him, you know, I don't know. I still feel like they're going to have to do something. I guess it depends on what the Jays think they're doing, if they can go out and get a Donaldson for something. But you're right, if they can't get those guys, you know, maybe they do. You know, if they can get Longoria and Archer out of Tampa Bay on the same deal, I think people would still be content to some degree. But, you know, right now, unfortunately, and it's not their fault. It's not the Cardinals' fault, and it's not the Cardinals' fault it's going to be this way. But if Giancarlo Stanton is not wearing Cardinal red in about 2 weeks, there are going to be a lot of people aggravated at the front office that they didn't do enough to get him.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm worried about the backlash of a lot of it. I mean, you see it in any report. I think people are geared up for it. I think they're ready for it. Some people want this to fall through just so they can complain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another thing that concerns me. And, you know, Longoria is 32, and I think you're going to hear a lot of, oh, you're getting this guy over the hill, which is completely out of character for the Cardinals to do anyway. They just need that lineup anchor that everything else can move around. You know, we want the superstar in Stanton, but I'm content with getting somebody else if you're going to also get an Archer or even a Cole Lemay to improve one of those sides of pitching, either the relief side or the starting side. But, you know, I don't want them to improve. You know, the sky is about as, you know, the target's about as high as we can get right now with Stanton. Mm-hmm. And you're right. If it falls short, there's going to be some pushback. And, you know, it's fair to say, but it also shows how spoiled the Cardinals fans are.
Yeah, you know, that old saying, shoot for the moon. If you fail, you'll land among the stars. That doesn't necessarily fit here. Because they could shoot for the moon and then completely miss and wind up, you know, crash landing again.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do think you're right that there's some people that are ready to pounce on whatever. And again, Cardinals may do everything they can. to make this deal, and do as be as reasonable as we can, because we've heard a lot already about how unreasonable the Marlins have been. It feels like their idea of they're going to get lots of top prospects and they're going to get a team to pay for that salary, and it's not real realistic. So unless they're adjusting their modifications, it may be that Stanton stays put because, you know, the team isn't getting what they want. But if that's the case, it's not the Cardinals' fault. They've done, you know, they don't have to meet the expectations of I don't want to say delusional front office, but it would be pretty close, I guess, just to say they did something.
Yeah, that's the one thing that scares me, is that they don't know what's going on, you know, in Florida, or in Miami, I guess I should say. But yeah. I mean, this should be a fun time, but it's kind of a stressful time after the past 2 years of missing out on the playoffs. So yeah, you're right. I mean, they may do everything possible. I mean, my biggest concern too is that this is going to happen, and the Cardinals are going to put their best offer on the table, and Boston's going to take all the contract and give a prospect, or that LA is going to take the whole contract and give them the next Seager. You know, they got Verdugo ready to go. You know, they're pressed for spots too. So that's what I'm concerned about, is some team is going to cave, take the whole contract and give them something. And that's one of the things that, you know, the Cardinals aren't going to do.
Yeah, and that's a fair, but like Derek Gould likes to say, he said a number of times, look, last August, anybody could have had Giancarlo Stanton, at least in theory, by just taking him off the waiver wire. And nobody did. Nobody wants that entire contract. You know, things change, and I get that. But I still think that there's probably truth to that. I don't think that any team, and that's partly because most of these teams now are run by smart sabermetric type people who are going to look at the numbers, who are going to calculate things out and say, look, you're not, you know, if we take this on, we're not giving you a guy that's worth X. For a guy that's worth X, you know, and pay for all that. That's just not going to happen. It's like us saying we're going to give you $400 million for a $300 million asset. That doesn't usually fly. So I feel like nobody's going to do that. And I also think that if somebody was going to do that, they probably would have already done it. I mean, the Marlins might try to get people to bid up against each other, but, you know, again, these teams are getting smarter, and they're also, at least most of them, I think, and maybe the Cardinals are the most desperate of the group, really, but I think a lot of other ones would say, you know, take it, leave it, we're gone. The Cardinals might be a little bit more likely to stick around the table because they really have to get something done.
Yeah, you're probably exactly right, and Gould's probably exactly right, and it's like, hey, if somebody wanted to do that, they could have done it already. In this time, though, when there's a little bit of desperation, mm-hmm. I never count out someone doing something stupid.
Well, sure.
That's my only issue mm-hmm. on that. And Dombrowski has shown that he's willing to do something stupid. And in the case of the Dodgers, I worry the fact that they didn't take it there at the deadline. They would have been one of the last teams that it got to. But they would have, to say, have traded if they would have claimed him just to take the whole deal, if Miami wanted anything in return – they may not have just said – they may not have been able to get Puig to go through waivers to go back to him. You know what I'm saying? One of those deals. So, but, you know, that's right. I mean, they could have just taken the whole contract and it wouldn't have been an issue. But, you know, that's one of those things. And I really hope a team doesn't do that, but it would never shock me if they did.
You know, John Morosi, who, of course, reported this, the Cardinals have gotten a formal offer out there. I also put up a pretty interesting tweet, and I think it's nothing that the rest of us haven't discussed, but it's still good to have it kind of out there in that kind of form. He was saying, look, yeah, Stanton very well may like to play out on the coasts, but if they don't get a reasonable offer from a coast team, it may come down to him playing in St. Louis or playing another year with the Marlins. That may be the only two choices, and we don't know what he would choose when it came down to that. So, and as somebody else put it, I think it was listening to Derek Gould talking to Ryan Fagan, I believe, from Sporting News on his podcast, you know, Justin Verlander said no to the Astros until he didn't. You know, and even though Giancarlo may have already said no to the Cardinals or indicated he might not waive that no trade to go to St. Louis, that doesn't mean that when push comes to shove, he won't make the decision to say, okay, I want to go win. I don't want to necessarily sit through another rebuild. Because if they're looking at rebuilding for the next 2 years, you know what, at the best, that third year before his opt-out, they might be good. You know, and then he has to decide whether he wants to opt out or not. I mean, do you really want to waste the 3 years that you've got guaranteed before you go into the contract market and pick what you want?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting choice.
Well, and I thought about that, too. It's even if he were to – it's not – I don't give a lot of credence to the idea of a player playing somewhere that's not close to home. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times those moves fail when those guys go back and he were to play right out in L.A. where he was 15 mm-hmm. minutes from his home and all that stuff. Now, I know that he's never going to think that that's going to happen. He just thinks that he's going to play. I don't think it's as important to him as what's being reported. But if it is and L.A.'s not involved here, they could be for 3 years and it could be his decision to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just don't think it's as far-fetched as we think it is.
It may be. Yeah, I think that... You know, if I was to pick, I'd say it's a little bit better than 50-50 that he comes to St. Louis. Might go 60-40. It also depends on the day to some degree.
Oh, I hear you. Well, but, and you know what's funny, too, is I know that there's certain guys that we immediately poo-poo their opinions. Mm. The one guy that I do that is Bowden. And I think Bowden wants Stanton in L.A. because he lives in L.A. He's an L.A. sports fan, and he was a terrible general manager. Just ask any Cincinnati Reds fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say, and this may get blown out of the water because I know people that feel the same way about this certain guy, Nightingale has really put his neck on the line on this. And that's credibility for a nationally renowned guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he is fairly confident it's going to be one of two teams if he doesn't stay in Miami. And that says a lot for him to come out and say that. I listened to Bowden's comments, and his turned into, well, sources of friends of his said that he wouldn't play in St. Louis. Well, crap, I could make that up. I could call someone in Miami right now and say, hey, shoot me a text real quick on this number. You know, that's not a lot of credibility to me to make that comment. You know, I think that Nightingale is a more renowned guy to put his neck on the line on that. So I think there's more smoke than Bowden's letting it seem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and like I said, I think that sometimes it's like, no, I don't really want to go to St. Louis. But then, you know, it gets down to, one, it's down to that's it. That's the only option. That's the only realistic option. And two, you get to thinking about it. I mean, you know, it's like knee-jerk, you know. No, why don't I want to go to St. Louis? But then when you start thinking about it, and you start thinking about, you know, tradition and history and $40,000 a night and you know, maybe playing. I think there was an article, what Gould was talking about how he, you know, followed Mark McGwire, I think. And seeing what McGwire did in St. Louis. You know, maybe when you start thinking about all that, maybe you change your mind. You know, again, we don't know. Obviously, the Cardinals feel like there's at least a chance that he either is interested in coming to St. Louis, or there's a strong chance that they think they can make him interested in coming to St. Louis. Otherwise, they're not going to go ahead and go through this offer business.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You know, it's I don't think there's any clarity on what he wants to do. I think there's enough sources out there to point that this is going to be flexible and it's going to be fluid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of just a we're going to have to wait and see type of situation.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's, you know, again, we can't do anything more about that. You know, if If Giancarlo Stanton becomes a Cardinal before the end of this broadcast, we'll let you know. but it seems unlikely that's going to happen. So we're going to move on to a few other things that have come out this week with the Cardinals. And there's not been a whole lot of news particularly, but we'll do a little bit of that before we get into our next round of favorite Cardinal players. And I guess the most interesting one to me, and we have maybe a couple of, you know, couple of different things, but the most interesting one to me was the fact that Matt Carpenter has been told to basically come to camp as a utility player. That he's not going to necessarily play first every day. He's not necessarily going to play third every day. He's not necessarily going to play second every day. He may play any of them. Now, it still sounds like he's probably going to play every day. He's just going to play in different positions each day. In fact, I think outfield was even tossed into that mix, that he might even look to play left field or something like that, which is kind of crazy given how many outfielders we have, but that's another story. So it's very interesting to see them unmoor Carpenter and to make him, I don't know, I think the super sub kind of feels, I mean, I don't guess he's really a sub because he's playing every day, but it just doesn't feel like it has the same cachet, the same anchor as it did when you knew he was going to play first base or he was going to play third base every day.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't really surprised. It seemed like something they may have planned more in previous years. You know, last year they wanted him to be the anchor there at first,
right.
And in the lineup, and you know, didn't work out. But I mean, I feel like he would need to. I don't know. I feel like injuries hampered him a lot more last year than we think. So you know, it kind of leads into I think they're just preparing for any move, and they're just like by going out and talking to Fowler. It seems to be that they're going to all these core guys and they're saying, "Hey, anything can happen at this point. Just be prepared. Mm-hmm. You're safe, but don't get too comfortable here." Be ready to be in the lineup every day and maybe in a different position, a la Zobrist. You know, I draw a lot of comparisons between Carpenter and Zobrist.
Yeah.
And I would like for him to be the defender at those positions as Zobrist is, and I don't think he will be, but I do think he does need to be in the lineup all the time. I think the situation between, you know, the Fowler moving positions, I know we were going to get to that here mm-hmm. in a little bit. I like that idea. I like them reaching out to get preparing him for something like this. I think that it'll be either a situation where he's going to have to be fluid and Jerko's going to have to be fluid, and they're going to probably play a different position just about every day. So I don't know. I mean, I like the approach that they've done to the offseason so far. Just like in Google's article today, they're positioning themselves to do something big. And whether that's Stanton or whether that's Longoria or whether that's, you know, maybe a Hosmer fallback. You know, you never know. But it just seems like there's a lot going on right now. And these signs of going to these core players and saying, hey, you may play, we may have to move you to a corner outfield spot. You may play somewhere different every day. Just prepare your body for it. Tells me that there's a lot of irons in the fire right now.
And, you know, and I get that. And that's true. But I guess it's just, it's so hard to reconcile this idea of we need Carpenter to play first every day because that's where we're going to get the best out of him. Now, obviously, that didn't work, partly because of, you know, injury, partly because of who knows what. But there's that disconnect between that and what we're seeing this year. And that's part of what we've seen over the last few years. And, you know, some would say it's because they're trying to manage around the manager. But, you know, it feels like every year there's a different focus for not mm-hmm. just for Carpenter, but for the, you know, they want to be more flexible. Then they want to be more rigid and everybody's going to play every day and everybody knows their role. And then they want to be more athletic and, you know, then they want to be more, you know, flexible. So it's very interesting to see them already kind of saying, I mean, again, I guess if it would be, hey, we don't know if you're going to play first base or if we're going to play third base next year. Prepare for one of those. You know, prepare for both of them. You're going to play one of them. But that's not what it is. It's like you're going to play, but you're going to float around. And I don't know. It's very difficult for me to see that kind of player as a top priority versus the player that is going to play every day at a set position, you know, because that means it feels like that means that they've got somebody better at first or at third or at second, and you can be good and you can help the team in those spots. I don't know. It's just an interesting way because they have talked so much and it feels like Carpenter has been this fixture and this focal point. It's very interesting to see this change in approach toward Carpenter. And I'm wondering if that's because, in my mind, maybe you can tell me if you agree, this front office has really started to put its foot down on some things this offseason, it feels like. And their idea was, I don't care what Carpenter wants. I don't care what Matheny wants. This is what we're going to need him to do.
That doesn't surprise me. I could see them doing something like that just because they have taken a hard-line stance on several things, you know, this year. I know it doesn't seem like that by asking someone to play multiple positions, but it seems like some nonsense has been cut out. And, you know, that's, don't get too comfortable here. You know, we need you to do this. And you know, maybe they feel like he put too much pressure on himself this playing first, you know, all year last year. I mean, I don't know. But it is a little bit funny. And I just wonder if this isn't where we're thinking, well, man, last year they told him not to do this. And the year before that, we didn't do that. I thought about this a lot after I read the article. And I just wonder, I'm just like, is it a fluid thing year to year on any of these guys anymore? That it's, you know, you've got to improve somewhere, and there's going to be an approach like, hey, you know, this year we're going to need you to do this, or, you know, in the next off season it's a, you know, we're going to need you to be more flexible. You know, I'm not sure where it's going. I all comes back to this for me, is that I'm just glad that there's life. Mm-hmm. That they're showing life, that they're trying to improve in different positions, and hey, be open for this because, you know, if this falls through, we're going after something like this. You know, if A falls through, we're going after Plan B. You know, one of those things. I'm just glad that I feel like they're trying right now, and all signs indicate that they're really pushing hard.
You know, I think it's funny because we're talking about the front office putting their foot down. I think we might really get a clue next year when we get the makeup of the roster. Because, you know, we were talking about it Mo talked about it with the bloggers this year, that he's like, he preferred 13 hitters, but Matheny and company really begged for the 13 pitchers, and so he wanted to give them the tools that they wanted. And I'm wondering if we won't just see him say, look, we did it, we've done it your way. And that wasn't very successful, so we're going to do it our way this year, and, you know, if it doesn't work, then, you know, it may be like, if it doesn't work, then we won't fire you, but, you know, we're going to do it our way. Don't worry about the results, but we're going to do it our way. Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. It just has a different feel. And maybe it's because they've missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, but I think it's the coaching hires and everything else. And then, like I said, with Carpenter, not necessarily getting that, and I don't want to say preferential treatment, because then that gets people going in a direction that I don't really want to go. But it is that idea that he was a core player and we kind of build around him however it works best for him. And I don't think that's there anymore.
No. That's, and you know, like John Doble put it perfectly. Carpenter's a great Robin, but he's not a Batman.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's perfect. And just, you know, like the piece I wrote, you know, a week ago, I think Carpenter probably puts up some pretty significant numbers hitting in front of a beast where guys can't pitch around him, where he's not the focal point of an offense. Because I mean, you can look on, you know, on Fangraphs, some Baseball Reference right now, Carpenter can hit. He's an offensive machine. You know, we know he's not a good base runner. You know, defensively, he's lacking. I thought he was I thought he was decent at first this year. I thought he was decent at third. You could live with him at second the year they'll go to the World Series. You know, those are all in question, but man, he can hit. And I just wonder, like I said, he may put up a year that surprises a lot of people if he does, say, have a stand behind him.
It very well may, and that'd be great if he did. But you know, we'll have to wait and see. Now, you did reference the fact that they also talked to Dexter Fowler about moving him to a corner next year, at least a possibility. And it sounded like not only if they brought in a Stanton or something like that, but even if they didn't, that they really wanted to move Tommy Pham over to center field, which is fair because Tommy Pham plays a better center field for the most part. Assuming he stays healthy. It feels like this is setting up that kind of Andrew McCutchen thing when, Polanco took over center and then got busted, and it was Marte, I guess. They got busted, and McCutchen took it back and kept it. But some people did notice whatever, I don't know, that, you know, John Mozeliak flew out to Vegas to talk to Fowler about this versus, you know, a phone call to Carpenter or, like, last year, Randall Grichuk and getting, you know, no notification. Is this a sign that the organization is trying to improve its communication, or is this just a sign that they kind of like Dexter Fowler and they're going to, you know, make him as comfortable as possible?
I think it's probably more in the Fowler. It's funny, you know, the minute that morning that article came out and we read it, you and I were going back and forth on the Twitter messages, and it was funny that I told you that on the Cusimano show that Frank had actually said, he goes, I get the feeling that Mozeliak and Fowler are really close.
Mm-hmm.
He made that comment. This was probably 2 weeks before this all came out. Well, then when I told you that, you said, I did notice that you said that you found it not odd, but it did kind of raise your eyebrows whenever that Mo had made the comment of, I like his company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's probably more to it. I don't know. I thought the Grichuk situation was blown out of the water this year, or last year, because I thought that was kind of more of a, yes, we're trying to improve up the middle, you know, this and this and this, trying to be more athletic, and then Grichuk saying he didn't know anything about all that and whatnot, and I was like, well, how do you not know unless you just don't read it? And I think Grichuk's a great guy, you know, I'm not putting it on him at all, but I think that lack of communication type situation with some of the players that we heard last year was probably, I think that was just blown out of proportion. I don't get the feeling that there's a communication issue at all, because I just don't think Mo cares enough to do that. I think there are probably situations to where he doesn't say the things that certain guys want to hear. So I don't know if that's an issue. And I mean, it's a profession, and I don't know how much handholding there needs to be anyway. But I got it more of a personal relationship with Fowler than I did a let's try to improve, because you know some of these guys, our message isn't getting this through to some of these guys that is to others. I didn't think it was like that at all.
Maybe so. I still do think that there's been some significant communication issues between the front office and the players. And, you know, whether that's, you know, in theory, you should use the manager as a conduit, but sometimes they go around. And I'm not blaming on Matheny. I don't know that that's any issue there. I'm saying maybe that's why it hasn't happened. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, Grichuk should have known he wasn't going to play center once they signed Fowler. But it also wouldn't have hurt for, you know, Mo to, or Matheny or somebody to call up and say, hey, you know, we signed Dexter, so we're going to need you to move to, you know, whatever, left, right field. Stuff like that. You know, again, I don't think, Tara Wellman and I went back and forth on Twitter in a conversation about what the conversation between Mo and Carpenter was like to, you know, to change gloves, and it's like, so yeah, pretty much do what you usually do, you know, come ready to play everything, you know, it's like, you know, you don't even have to put it into words, you know, Carpenter's going to be like that, so, I mean, there's different expectations, there's different, backgrounds. I mean, you did just sign Dexter Fowler to a very big deal to play center field. And, you know, if he's not content with that, if you're not happy with that, I mean, he could be really asking for a trade, and that could kind of throw a wrench in the works a little bit. So, whereas, you know, a guy like Grichuk, if, you know, he's your property, if you will, he's a guy that's just coming up, he's still not really firmly established, you know, those are the kind of guys that they move when you want them to move. They jump when you say, you know, they say how high when you tell them to jump. A guy that you've brought in to try to, you know, somewhat make a bit of a, one of the faces of the franchise, at least, and I don't know that Fowler has done that, but I think there was some of that indication when they wanted to bring him in. You want him as happy as possible with the organization. So, you know, again, I hope that it's a sign that they're going to be a little bit more, you know, at least make the phone calls or at least do the texts, you know, let the players know that, that, you know, there's been a trade before they find out on TV if they can. Stuff like that. But, you know, I think there's always going to be different approaches to different players.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think we're pulling on the same rope on that.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing this week was a little bit of talk about Alex Reyes. You know, again, Mo has said at times, it feels like at least, and it surprisingly, because we didn't expect it, that Alex Reyes could be in the rotation come opening day. He said this week, that's not completely ruled out. He also didn't rule out, you know, Reyes not making an appearance till May 1st, and then maybe being a bullpen guy when he does. If he doesn't show up till May 1st, I think the bullpen makes much more sense, because you figure your rotation's probably set. You've got five guys that have been going at it for a month at least. So, I don't know. What are you thinking about Reyes? What does this all mean, or does it mean anything, or if it's just Mo kind of trying to revamp expectations for him?
Probably more caution than anything. You know, I was one that I was probably reading a little bit too much into it about how happy they were with how he handled his rehab situation and how he kind of transformed his body, and they were really happy with maybe just the maturing process. And that kind of told me, I was like, it wouldn't surprise me if they give him some starters innings early, kind of give him that elongated break around the All-Star break, and maybe just go right in with it and let's just do this. We've lost that year on you already. Let's get what we can, and let's, if you're going to be a superstar, let's make it happen now. But I think that now it's probably more caution than anything of let's take baby steps to get him back. Let's see how he looks in spring, which if he looks great in spring, this is probably a non-issue anyway. But, I don't know. I like the approach. I think there may be an approach to this of saying that given the May 1 deadline of back off any of the trade requests. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? I thought about that when it came out, too. I was like, you know, that could be a kind of a cautionary flag that doesn't need to be there. And that may be because he's the number one guy that people are asking about. And, I mean, he kind of said that on the radio today, that Reyes is the first name that anyone asks about when in regards to their pitching. So I don't know. I'd hate to see Reyes go, personally. So whatever he needs to do and feels like he needs to do to make sure that he stays here, I'm all in favor.
Yeah, I don't want to see Reyes go. I mean, one, because I think he's a very good talent. Two, because I think you're selling low on a guy. You know, even if people think he's going to be what he used to be, they're not going to pay you that way when he's coming off of Tommy John surgery. But you also wonder, I mean, your point is valid. You know, it may be, hey, people stop asking because he may not be ready. You also wonder if it's a way of signaling to the people that are like us that don't want Reyes traded. It's like, hey, look, you know, we may be dealing him because he's not, you know, let's temper our expectations about what we're going to get out of Reyes next year because we might not have him.
Yeah.
I don't know it's that. I don't think it's the main thing. I think it may be tempering expectations, but it's not because he's not going to be here. But, you know, there is that option. Again, I think the Cardinals have enough young arms, arms that have proven themselves, that I think they can get by without doing Reyes in this deal. It may take them throwing in an extra arm, but they can afford that. But I don't know. We'll see. But I've always thought he was going to, because Mo told us this year he would have started in the bullpen if he'd been healthy. I just assumed that coming off Tommy John that he would next year too. But, we'll see. Hopefully he heals up well enough and maybe he can be in that mix for opening day. But I feel like there's a lot of questions there.
Well, and one thing that we may just be looking over completely is the fact that he may be a vital piece to the bullpen.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that they counted. Well, he said as much at the blogger event of our bullpen hadn't been the same since we got the word that he wasn't going to be there. Mm-hmm. And that they may be counting on him to play a vital part back there.
Before we switch into the favorite players, and I know we're running a little bit long for this first segment, but it doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway. Tomorrow is the deadline to add players to the 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. The Cardinals have about 5 spots right now. There was some thinking that the Cardinals would need to make some moves to free up maybe a couple more spots or, make sure they have, because you don't want to fill up. There's some logistical issues about putting people on. You got to have room on your 40-man to make signings and trades and stuff like that without having to get rid of people. So, and there's always guys like Mike Myers and maybe Rowan Wick that could be taken off the 40-man roster and not really missed. Cardinals should be adding Tyler O'Neill, Austin Gomber, Oscar Mercado. Possibility of Patrick Wisdom, although I don't really think that's going to happen.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. I don't know if there's really anything to say about that more than just to talk about that it was there. I'm trying to see who else might be. Daniel Ponce de Leon, Arturo Reyes, a lot of names didn't. I think Matt Pierce, maybe. A couple names I've heard of. Doesn't feel like there's anybody except maybe Ponce de Leon, but given that he missed almost all of last year because of that line drive that hit him in the head, didn't feel like anybody's really going to take a risk on putting him on a major league roster this year. So it really didn't feel like, I think that they got enough spots. I don't know that we'll see any moves tomorrow to free up any more.
No, I agree with that. I thought there would be a lot. I thought movement was going to be necessary tomorrow, which I don't think it's going to be. I think they pretty much set their mind on what it's going to be. I wouldn't be completely surprised if there wasn't an outfielder traded tomorrow. And it could be one of those just complete roster clearing type moves. Hmm. Maybe even a 2-for-1. Type situation that comes about. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Grichik may be involved in any Stanton deal. I don't know. We've said that from the beginning. But if, let's say, he's traded tomorrow, I wouldn't be completely blown away with that. I mean, I wouldn't be completely happy. I like Grichik, but I wouldn't. It wouldn't surprise me if a deal like some that sort of, in a way would be done, especially a guy that's due to get paid. Mm-hmm. Like in his situation, it wouldn't surprise me if a move got made tomorrow before. I think we'll see, not necessarily just Cardinal moves, I think we'll see quite a few moves tomorrow just to clear space for every team, really.
Yeah, I think there'll be, I think the Yankees made a small deal today. Maybe a few others in the league trying to set their 40-man, but I don't know. The Cardinals, you're right. They might do something, but it feels like they've got enough room now that they.
It's not as pressing as we thought it might be.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, the 2-for-1 thing reminds me. I mean, Gersh and Mo had indicated there might be some of those kind of deals early on. I think they wound up, maybe they couldn't find that deal that they liked. I think they wound up, non-tendering and releasing a few more players than they thought they would. I don't know. It was a little bit interesting, but we'll find out. I guess we'll find out tomorrow whether we have anything else to do or not. So, all right, is that about cover this week, you think?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, then let's shift gears to our favorite Cardinal player segment that will not talk about Giancarlo Stanton, although he would probably jump quite high up the lists if the Cardinals were to make anything. again, we have gone through everybody that has gotten 24 points or less. You can find that list on our it's our pinned tweet on the Meet Me at Mutual Twitter feed. You can find the spreadsheet there. All the names that we've talked about, which shows we've talked about it. This is our, well, I think this is like our fourth show. One, two, three, four. No, it's our fifth show to do this. So go back and listen to some of those other ones if you want to catch a name that we've already covered. We'll start with number 20, our point number 25. It's not our 25th player. He received 25 points, and that is the only one that did so. Mike LaValliere. You got any thoughts about Mike LaValliere?
when he was actually brought up, we covered him a little bit a couple weeks ago in the Tony Pena trade. If you know, just to remind everybody, it was he and Vance like that got over Tony Pena. I don't remember his Cardinal tenure as much as I do Vance Like in that deal. You know, he turned out to be a great catcher for those two, for the Pirates teams in the World Series. But no, I don't, not a lot of memories on the Cardinals. Kind of an afterthought there at the, in those early, in the Whitey days in the, you know, he wasn't on the 82 team.
He was on the 85 and 86 team.
Okay, that's right. So he was on the World Series team, and I was thinking it was more early 80s. I'm looking at his baseball reference here, kind of stammering around this a little bit. But, yeah, just the one a little exposure in 1986. Like I said, not a lot of memories for me from him in those days, just kind of overshadowed by everybody else. But, you know, he immediately went and won a gold glove in Pittsburgh. So the trade worked out well for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him more. Of course, I came into ball about 87. But I remember him more as a Pittsburgh guy. I remember him being traded by the Cardinals. I think this is partly a factor of our voter that picked Yadier Molina and a whole bunch of other catchers. Maybe because I had a factor because LaValliere got a second place vote from somebody. He also got a fifth place vote, it looks like, as well. Still a little bit skewed maybe, but LaVoyer was, like I said, if nothing else, he brought Tony Pena over. So
exactly, I wish I could say more about him, but that was the only thing I can say good is that he brought over Pena, who was, you know, a great player in that 86-87.
For 26 points, we get a guy that we are a little bit more familiar with, and that is Skip Schumacher.
Oh wow!
Obviously, Skip, a guy that, you know, went from outfield to second base under the Tony La Russa era. Then, you know, spent a lot of time in St. Louis, then bounced around a little bit after that. I think the Dodgers and the Padres, and I'm trying to remember if there was any. Cincinnati after leaving St. Louis. Good, you know, obviously quality guy, one of those, you know, great in the clubhouse guys. I know he had some, you know, some causes, especially I think he had the friend of his that had a daughter that was really sick or something. They did some fundraising for her. It was a big story while he was in St. Louis.
I do remember that.
Yeah. So I guess he actually didn't. He went to Padres spring training camp. He didn't actually get the job. It was the Dodgers and the Reds. Retired, last played in 2015, which feels like he's been out for a long time. It's only been two seasons. You know, just a, you know, it's one of those good quality, you know, kind of, even though I don't think he was used that much, he feels like that utility guy that makes good to some degree. Hit 300 in, three different seasons for the Cardinals. So, I mean, that's something.
Yeah, it's you've got to give it to a guy who, A, you, is deemed valuable enough that they ask you to move positions, and B, is athletic enough to be able to do it and not embarrass himself. You know what I mean? That's, you know, they were like, well, we've got to get his bat in the lineup more. It's going to have to be at second base. Let's approach him about doing it. Because if you remember, it was almost a joke.
Oh, yeah.
When it was brought up at the time. And then, you know, he was by no means a gold glove winner, but, you know, he was decent. I mean, he was probably one of those close to Matt Carpenter types. So, you know, you got to give it to him. I mean, he was on several good teams, you know, won a World Series, won two World Series with them, basically. And, yeah, that's a pretty good career.
Yep. Can't argue with that. So, I don't know. It was good. It was interesting, and I think we'll see Skip around baseball some.
Well, you knew the guys that, you know, he's going to be on the Padres bench this year, and it says a lot when he's asked to come out to do that. You know, he's got to be a pretty decent human being.
Would think so. All right, number 27. We have our points 27. Got two guys here, about as far apart as you can imagine, at least in playing time. The first is Paul DeJong, and the second is Joe Medwick. I know you and I were talking a little bit earlier about it's difficult to really talk much about the current guys. I mean, we talk about them all the time. We don't really know what their career is going to look like in St. Louis. I mean, we can, especially these young guys, that, you know, Paul DeJong's had a good year. We've talked a lot about his year, so I don't know that there's a lot to say there. But, you know, Joe Medwick, you know, Hall of Famer, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, sir.
And what, you know, Triple Crown winner, went by the name of Ducky. I don't think he liked it much, but he did. You know, again, he's a guy, you know, played in the, it's the guy that, you know, had a slide in the 34 series that got the Tiger fans all worked up so much that they threw trash in game sevens. Of course, Cardinals were up by like 11-0 or something like that. Threw so much trash at him. It reminded you of the, you know, wild card game in Atlanta. And the commissioner there basically said, for the good of him and for the good of the team, they went ahead and replaced him. Again, it helped that it was 11-0 at the time. The Cardinals were only a couple of innings away from winning the World Series. It was better to, you know, put a replacement player out there for those two innings than have it end in a forfeit, I think. But, you know, a guy that, you know, a lot of people may know the name, but, you know, nobody saw him play because he played in the 30s. And he's a guy that doesn't seem to get a lot of attention, even in when you're looking at Cardinal history. He's a Hall of Famer, but that doesn't have his number retired. He's one of the few.
Yeah, this is one of those situations to where I say this every week and then I kind of forget about it. And, you know, if anybody doesn't know so far that we go through this blind, you know, I'm not sure who gets when Daniel announces them. I know them the same time you do, so I'm not really sure. It's one of those to where I wish I had my Bill James handbook ready because he's really good at a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. I just love looking at these stat lines on some, like his Triple Crown year. You know, he drove in 154 runs. You know, he was top five in voting three times. One year he had 64 doubles. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just some crazy numbers that I know that some of them are inflated from back in those days. But yeah, those are some exciting teams. And yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know what else you could say.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at that Triple Crown year, that year of 1937, his OPS plus, which is, you know, is adjusted. I mean, that's going to – I'm not all the saber, but that should be relative to the league of that year. So even though the numbers are high because the offense was high, everybody's numbers were high, his OPS plus was 182. I mean, he was fairly close to twice as good as, you know, as the league average.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. It's pretty impressive. So you put all those numbers together, You know, the 30s were definitely an offensive era, but it's a little surprising that the Cardinals haven't retired his number. It would be number 7. It looks like he wore it from 33 to 40 with the Cardinals. He also wore a couple other numbers, 28, 21, 12, but 7 was in his major number. And, you know, the Cardinals, I even remember asking Derek Gould about this once. I mean, because that really kind of over, it looked like it was overlooked, and it looked like, I think it's the Cardinals are, it's not, they're not going to retire everybody's number that's in the Hall of Fame. Being in the Hall of Fame, get your number, you know, is kind of a requirement to get your number retired, but just because you get there doesn't mean they will retire it. And I don't think they seem to have an urge to go back that far into history, and I guess that's fair, but I think it does somewhat, does it, I mean, you know, statue out front, or something to help maybe people to realize just how good he really was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a great point. If you would have asked me if his number was retired, not realizing that it was 7, I probably would have said yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beforehand through with the big club. But you know, that's an interesting point. I never thought about that.
Yeah, and I would have to look, but I would imagine he's the only Cardinal Hall of Famer. And I mean, he did play some years in Brooklyn. He played some years with the New York Giants. But, you know, 11 of his 17 years were in St. Louis, or, you know, so he's pretty much a Cardinal. I would say he's probably the only one that played a majority of their time in St. Louis that doesn't have their number retired. I may be wrong. I'd have to look at the Hall of Fame and see, but it's one of the rare ones. I mean, because you got Dizzy Dean's number retired, right? I mean, and Dizzy played for the 34 team. Of course, Dizzy's definitely a more notable personality in Cardinal history, but yeah, I think Medwick sometimes may get a short end of the stick when we're talking about Cardinals. All right.
Yeah.
28 points. We got a few of these now. Rex Hudler, Jose Martinez, Steven Piscotty, Enos Slaughter, Lee Smith, Reggie Smith. Again, I think we can kind of not worry about Jose Martinez and Steven Piscotty. We've talked a lot about them over the years, or over this year especially. Enos Slaughter, another Hall of Famer. Lee Smith, a guy that could be a Hall of Famer. A lot of people say should. Yeah, I mean, where do you stand on that? Where do you think Big Lee should be when it comes to Hall of Fame voting?
I'm the worst on the Hall of Fame voting stuff, just because it seems like everybody in my era I thought was just so good that they deserved to be in. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those. He was a big, intimidating guy. I mean, when you think closer, that's what you think. Mm-hmm. With Smith. Now, it's funny, Smith is, you said you really took on baseball about, you always say,
87. Yeah.
Just to throw this out to you, what do you remember most about Lee Smith since you came? Like, to me, Smith will forever be like a Cub. And that I may hold that against him, you know, a little bit.
Fair enough. Actually, but, yeah, I mean, because I think by the time I really came to know him, he was really when he was in St. Louis. I mean, I knew of him probably from his time with Boston. But I would have probably put him as a Cardinal.
Yeah, it's weird. I've just always considered. I always got the biggest kick out of it. My dad, I remember when he was traded from Boston, mm-hmm. or from Chicago to Boston, and it was for Calvin Schiraldi, and it was. When somebody said that, I'll never forget my dad's reaction to this. Somebody said that they felt like Schiraldi threw just as hard as Smith, and my dad just about came out of his chair on that one, because, you know, Smith was the guy back in those days about bringing heat, just big and intimidating and all that. And that was what my dad was about. He's from the Nolan Ryan mode. everything was 95 plus, and you just pumped it. And I'll never forget his reaction whenever they made that trade and they justified it by that. You know, I was just looking too, and I skipped over a little bit. Just like I said, anybody that listens to these, we don't do a lot of justice to the former players. You know, we've researched it and we know. But, you know, Slaughter is another one of...
Well, hang on. Before you get off Lee Smith, I do want to...
Okay, go ahead.
A couple of things that I didn't know until looking at here, and I don't remember them. The first year he was in... No, the second year he was in St. Louis, came in second in Cy Young voting. Which, as a reliever, is probably pretty telling. Came in eighth in MVP voting. I also remember most, sadly, the most I remember about Lee Smith is when he got traded. I remember being in college my freshman year and finding out that he was traded for Rich Batchelor, you know, some no-name guy from the Yankees that we even knew at the time was a no-name guy. I think he stuck in the system a year or two, maybe after that, but... And that was, because I think that's, honestly, thinking about it, could be the last trade that the Cardinals did as a sell. Because they really haven't done, I mean, unless I'm missing something, I can't remember the last time they traded a big-name guy for some prospects, except for, you know, that'd be 93 and Lee Smith.
Yeah. Maybe so. I mean, that's it, looking at this, and you're right. You know what? He was fourth in Cy Young voting the year after,
yeah,
92. You know, and then three straight seasons of over 40 saves. Pretty impressive, and I kind of poo-pooed that right away, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest with you. To me, after the 87, after the series in 87, and after the shortcomings in 88, mm-hmm. The early 90s to me are a dark time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As a Cardinals fan. And there was a lot that they just weren't very good. Mm. And, you know, it was just kind of a turnoff in those days. And I'm completely guilty of that, of not realizing how good he was right. As a Cardinal.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, you were going on to eat a Slaughter.
No. And it's okay. I was just looking at the Hall of Fame, and it was going to bring up his retired number. Mm-hmm. And I was wanting to just to kind of cross-reference to see how long he had been in St. Louis to where we could kind of compare it to Medwick a little bit. But, you know, he was in – I mean, he did service time, but was in for – you know, how long did you say? You know,
Medwick,
he put in
Medwick was 11 of 17, and it looks like, you know, Slaughter's – 13 of 19, but like you said, he missed 43 through 45 in the war, so probably would have had three more years there of Cardinal service. He's got that, you know, Enos Slaughter's dash. That moment that stands out. It could have been, even if he'd never done anything, you know, I think anything more than that, I think he would have stood out because of that moment. It's always good to have those things.
Well, absolutely. I mean, let's put it this way. Freeze won't be a Hall of Famer, but his number will probably be retired in St. Louis. It's all said and done.
Well, he'll definitely be in the Cardinal Hall of Fame. Let's put it that way. Yep. I don't know if I'm willing to bet on a retired number.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely going to. And that's and because of those moments. That's right. It's huge. Slaughter had a solid career.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of interesting because, you know, some of the voting in the Hall of Fame for players is kind of iffy at times. But he did. He finished in the top 20 in the MVP. Let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. You know, he was in the All-Stars pretty much every year from 41 to 53, except for the years he missed in military service. You know, and played until he was 43, playing with the Yankees and the Milwaukee Braves in 59. So, you know, he kind of stretched his career out a little bit there at the end of it, but, you know, his time in St. Louis was really solid.
Yeah.
I'll admit, I don't know anything about Reggie Smith. I know the name.
Yeah, I more think. Of a hitting coach.
Maybe. I just not anything that really rings any bells with me. Of course, I remember Rex Hudler, the Wonder Dog, playing with us. I think, although now I think of him more as the Royals broadcaster. I still remember him having a couple of good years with St. Louis.
Yeah. I remember when they signed him, I had high expectations for it. But that goes into another one of those, you know, kind of dark times, too. I remember more. My biggest memory of Hudler isn't as a Cardinal. I remember the one game play-in game. It was Randy Johnson, Mark Langston in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that at all? When he didn't cover the back and Langston just about turned into a fist fight in the dugout. I'll never forget the look that Langston was giving him the entire time they were in the dugout. The camera stayed right on him the entire time.
Oh yeah. Well, that was a big game. I mean, that was the year that the Angels had that big lead and Seattle came back and forced the one game playoff and won it. Was that 95?
It would have been 95, and that would have
because then that was the year. Then they went on to beat the Yankees in the playoffs or in the first round.
It would have been the Mad Dash.
Yeah, Griffey sliding.
Yeah, it was awesome. It sounds about right, and that would have been Showalter's team in 95. I think you're probably right about that.
Yeah.
Because that was Torrey Day started right after, wasn't it?
I think
so. Or did they start that year?
And that I don't know. Let me look at the schedule and results, because it should tell me. They were... Yeah, they were up 11 games on August 9th, and they finished second. That's the Angels that year. So, yeah, that was the year that they collapsed. I do remember that. Because it was the first time that there'd been a playoff game in a while.
Yeah, I was so excited. Yeah.
And Randy Johnson pitching it, I mean, that was all you could ask for. So.
Yeah, Langston Johnson. I'll never forget it. It was in the middle. It was the afternoon game. It was awesome.
It was in the Kingdom, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of remember that as well. So, I know I didn't watch it, but I probably saw highlights or something. But yeah, pretty interesting. All right, 29 pointers. Now this may be a little tough to deal with, but we got Brendan Ryan, Oscar Tavares, and Luke Weaver. And again, Weaver, as we've said, is one we've kind of difficult to talk about. Let's deal with Brendan Ryan first. I think I'm going to ask you, and I have a feel like I'm going to guess it. What's your one memory? If you were asked memory of
that's
Brendan Ryan,
softball. Yeah, that's the one memory is Carpenter chewing him out and you know what? It's funny. I mean, how ignorant do you have to be to pull that number when Carpenter's on the mound? Yeah. You know, when you asking for it, that's whenever you're like, because you can see he was fuming on the mound the entire time, and you're just like, I would never want to be in that situation. And then Ryan coming out of that tunnel, he was so defeated. That was kind of maybe the death nail in his Cardinals career a little bit, really. He never really recovered. They knew that he wouldn't hit. They just figured that he would be a superior shortstop, and it just never happened.
Oh yeah. I mean, and he definitely, and we got Redbird Rance back there writing that Carpenter crossed the line, calling him out, which is, anyway,
they're in the minority, let's put it that way.
Yeah, there was some of that for sure. Brendan Ryan did develop into a pretty decent shortstop. I don't want to say decent. He was always a good glove guy. I mean, his defense is still pretty. I mean, he's one of those guys that you would bring in if you had the opportunity. You had eight good hitters, you could play Brendan Ryan. And every once in a while, he would have a season or a bit that the bat wasn't just absolutely terrible. It wasn't necessarily great, but technically Brendan Ryan apparently still is active. which I didn't know. He did not play in the major leagues last year. And he had 17 at-bats with the Angels and 16 and hit over 77. Actually 14 at-bats, sorry. But yeah, I mean, his glove was there, but his batting never really was. He had a 248 average 1 year in Seattle. Of course, he had that 292 average in St. Louis, which was just insane. And people, I think people got a little excited about that and then dropped off next year and then was gone after that. And then he had like three straight years where he hit under 200. That's difficult.
Wow.
I mean, that's difficult to keep your job, even if you are a defensive whiz. That's when you're going to be the guy that they bring in the seventh inning to, you know, play shortstop. You're not going to get a whole lot of starting there.
Yeah, very true. That was he is just one of the names that was in the revolving shortstop era for them. They just could not find anybody that stuck in there, and we all kind of had high hopes for each and every one in a different way, and he was one of those. I was like, well, he was I remember, you know, I did a charity event where I got to talk to Ozzy for a while, and one of the questions I asked him, I said, could he turn into one of those shortstops, and he didn't tell me no, but it was one of those that the list was really long for him to dance around and tell me no. one of those things. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. If you're interested, and if you, whatever you believe it, I'm looking at Baseball Reference, his defensive war for a few years. I mean, he was 3.2, 2.6, 3.6 for the 4 years between 2009 and 2012. I think that, you know, that's saying a lot because he was not, and, you know, that was like, you know, well above what he was providing offensively. So that meant, you know, that year, that best year in St. Louis, he was a 4.5 win war. 3.2 of it came from defense. He was a four war player in 2011 with the Mariners, a 3.4 with the Seattle in 12. Pretty good, pretty telling here. 3.4 war, which is not bad. You know, 3.6 defensive war. Well, that, you know. Figure out what the offensive war was. It was not good. but yeah, I mean, but you know, just he could make some plays, but he couldn't hit. You know, and then there's Tavares, and I think that's that has such a shadow over everything. If the Cardinals have Oscar Tavares, we don't spend half of this time talking about Giancarlo Stanton.
No, it's hard to talk about, and it. I think this year was the first year that I heard on several different outlets about how crippling it was for that to happen.
Mm.
And I think that it's kind of the wounds have healed enough to where you can say those things that he named the person before him that came with as much offensive upside and what word am I looking for? And
potential.
I hate using that word. I mean, I've heard this before.
Mm.
Bernie Williams had none. Gerald Williams retired with a lot.
Yeah,
you know, one of those. But they really they gave him a lot of tough love. But it was funny. He was one of those guys that when you see come through, I saw him in Tulsa quite a bit. When he was through with Springfield, and it was one of those, he wasn't impressive until he turned it on, and then you realize that he's obviously working on something. You know, he was just pulling off pitches, and the next thing you know, he'd hit one, you know, 4.25. You know, one of those situations. And he was athletic. I mean, he was playing center field in those days, and you just wonder what. I don't know. It's sad to think about. Because if you remember, in his St. Louis time, everybody kind of complained that he was just missing pitches. And remember, he popped up a lot of balls to the opposite side of the field. And you just wonder if there wasn't a development that was happening at that amount of time when it all clicked, if he wasn't going to be something special. And, I mean, it's easy to say now, but I had a feeling that was what was going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, that was when everybody was complaining that Matheny wouldn't play him.
Yeah.
You know, that Alan Craig had to get traded so that, that he could play. And you're right, he did struggle a little bit to his first bit, but I always felt with the way, with the personality that he seemed to have, the big smile and everything like that, I felt as soon as he could put the numbers together to go with it, he was going to be huge, not only in St. Louis, but, you know, everywhere. And that's what the Cardinals expect. I mean, they really had that down. And just so, you know, his death, they have to go, they go get Hayward. You know, they aren't able to keep Hayward. And they're still searching for that, that core bat that they thought they were going to have. And that's kind of led them to this, the Stanton discussion.
You really wonder if a healthy Tavares wouldn't mean right now that we have an outfield for a of 8 to 10 years, Biscotti in left, Grichuk in center, and Tavares in right.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. You probably aren't getting Dexter Fowler.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. I don't know where Tommy Pham ever would have fit into this. You know, would they have still been as patient with Pham over the last few years if they had a Tavares? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if he'd ever had a chance to break it. I don't know. A lot of different things. A lot of variables. That's, you know, you and I talked about doing a bit of a show on a what ifs this winter about what could have happened if different things had, had happened differently.
Yeah.
In Cardinal history. And I think that's just, that is one of them. You know, what if Oscar Tavares, what if he listens to Carlos Martinez and goes over and stays in that resort with Martinez and isn't out, you know, driving the roads, you know, intoxicated. And that's the worst part. I mean, cause it was devastating, you know, seeing those tweets and getting that news and dealing with that when you just thought it was rain, slick weather and bad roads. But then to throw in that factor of, you know, of alcohol involved, you know, and some people say that that shouldn't affect how you think about it because it's still remarkably sad, and that's true, but, you know, I think it, you know, when you know it's preventable, it's a little bit more, it's still sad and it's still devastating. But it's a little more frustrating, it's a little more angry when you know that it didn't have to happen.
Yeah, have you, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but I highly recommend it. There's a Real Sports on HBO, it's about 15-20 minutes, and it covers all the players' deaths, and it's significant.
Yeah.
And it's, a lot of it is, you know, drinking and driving, and they're so poor in the Dominican that they don't have a police force after 7 p.m. Mm. You know, one of those things. And there's drive-through bars and all kinds of stuff. And it's really scary. It's really scary. And one of those, you're just like, oh man, just it kind of points to how lucky we are. And it points that you're given an opportunity to not do anything stupid. I'm not so sure that opportunity is given there. Mm-hmm. It's not as widely publicized, but it's definitely a problem.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's cultural issues, there's differences, there's everything. But again, you know, like I said, Carlos had a hint at some degree. I mean, he didn't know that this was going to happen, but he really wanted his friend over there. And, you know, if he had been able to talk him into it, you know, things would be so much. And not that I'm laying anything on Carlos Martinez, because, you know, he did what he could do, and he had no idea what was coming on, but just wish he had been successful and been able to do that, because, yeah. You know, I mean, and nothing else. I mean, you remember that first home run in the rain, you know, and everybody just going nuts, or the postseason home run when, you know, all that potential that was there and just didn't see it. In fact, it was back when we were doing I think it was UCP Radio on Sunday nights. No, maybe it was a Gateway, but I had Nick from Pitchers Hit 8 had scheduled to go on with me that night, and, you know, to try to do a show like that, you know, 20 minutes 45 minutes after we're getting this news. It was, I don't think we got the full, I don't know if we even did the full, we definitely didn't do a full hour. I don't know that we got a half hour done. It's just too tough to do. And unfortunately, you know, the Cardinals have dealt with a lot of death in players, but unfortunately, you know, that's become a little bit more common over the last few years. I mean, you had Tavares, and then you had Ventura, and then you have, you know, Jose Fernandez. It feels like I'm missing one. But still, I mean, it's just like, you know, these play, and I know that's always happened. I remember the boat accident in spring training with Tim Cruz and Steve Olin. And Bob Ojeda from the Indians. You know, these things do happen, but it feels like over the last few years they've become a little bit more prevalent, and that's a scary thing. You'd like to think that some of these guys are looking and seeing this, but unfortunately for some it doesn't sink in.
Yeah.
So
scary.
It is. And a terrible place to end our list, but it is actually a pretty good place on the points total, and that we have run over our hour tonight, or really close to it, so I think we will stop there. Get into the 30-pointers next week. Alan and I will take the Thanksgiving weekend off, unless John Mozeliak decides that he needs a Stanton for Thanksgiving. If a big deal gets done, Al and I will try to squeeze in a show, but otherwise look for us probably December 1st or 2nd, depending on how our schedules work out. We'll be back with you then. Alan, is there anything as a Cardinal fan you are thankful for as we get into this week of Thanksgiving?
I'm thankful that a change is coming, and everything is pointing to that direction. So we can keep our fingers crossed, but at least they're trying.
Yeah, and I'm thankful I'm not a Cubs fan. So I mean, whatever. Yeah. But I think that's good. We are lucky to be Cardinal fans, because even though it's been a rough last couple years, it does seem like the front office has heard that and is willing to fix that, and that's not every team gets that. So that's good, and hopefully they can. So Alan, I wish you all the best of holidays, and we'll be back with you like I said, as the calendar turns into December, and hopefully we have some plenty of interesting things to talk about then. But until then, that's Alan. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Sooner from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!